This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. 11 people left dead in a mass shooting at a Pittsburgh synagogue. Reports indicate that anti-Semitic attacks are on the rise in the U.S. The Cincinnati-based Jewish Community Relations Council is hosting its annual meeting this evening with the theme, The Oldest Hatred in the World. Let's discuss. Joining Cincinnati Edition today, our Tablet editor-in-chief, Alana Newhouse. She's the featured speaker at tonight's event, and she joins us on the phone. Welcome, Alana.
Thanks so much.
And Jewish Community Relations Council director, Jackie Conjato. Welcome, Jackie.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here.
Jackie, today's event is described in your press release as, quote, the Jewish Community Relations Council's 80-year-old mission of fighting anti-Semitism and working to secure a just society for all will take center stage with new relevancy at its annual meeting this year. Under the theme, The Oldest Hatred in a New World, the JCRC will showcase its efforts to combat contemporary manifestations of anti-Semitism and highlight how anti-Semitism intersects with other forms of hate. So first, why is anti-Semitism considered to be the oldest hatred?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very lengthy conversation. I'll try and boil it down. But I think it dates back all the way to really the beginnings of the Jewish community and this idea that Jews were, think about at the time of the birth of Judaism, brought monotheism to the world in a world of polytheism. And so it was sort of the original other. And throughout history, I think anti-Semitism has morphed and changed and taken on new forms. But it's always sort of been this idea, this conspiracy idea that, that Jews are the ultimate other. And therefore, anti-Semitism is sort of rich fodder for extremist groups and people who want to other communities to use as fuel for their hatred. So it fuels many other forms of bigotry and hatred towards other communities.
Well, why does it persist over all these centuries?
That's an interesting question. I think Alana has written about this, so I'd love to have her speak on it as well. But from what I've read and what I know, I think it's because it's particularly hard to understand. It operates differently than other forms of hatred, and maybe Alana can speak a little bit more about that. It changes. It mutates like a virus. Deborah Lipstadt describes it sort of like, any other virus that lays dormant. And it comes out during times of stress and during times when the environment is ripe. And so we see it ebb and flow throughout history, and we know that when we see it persisting or coming about in a more public way, making its way into more mainstream discourse, that it's an indicator of something much bigger that's happening in society, that sort of the ideals of pluralism and small d, democracy, are decaying in a dangerous way that really affects far, far more than the Jewish community in any space.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show. Alana, so that was the question we're starting with here. Why does anti-Semitism persist over all of these centuries?
Yeah, I have to say I agree with Jackie. I thought she put it beautifully. The part of this is human nature, right? When individuals or communities experience stress of any kind, it is a human impulse to look to other humans as possible sources. One of the brilliant parts of the way that anti-Semitism emerged was it essentially created an excuse that you could use, a way to other set group of people, no matter what your problem was, they could be the cause of it. So if your problem was capitalism, they were capitalists. If your problem was socialism, it was socialist. If your problem was the economy, they were the cause of your economic problem. So as a result, it does create a virus effect that can be applied at any moment in any era.
In 2017, we saw a 57% rise in anti-Semitic incidents, according to numbers from the Anti-Defamation League. They cited that as the largest single-year increase on record. And then according to FBI data, hate crimes also rose 17% in 2017. So what do we think is driving this currently, Jackie? Because for that to be the single biggest increase year over year in this modern age seems rather startling.
Yeah, so a couple things I want to qualify first with, you know, we always like to look also at people's reporting of this, right? So I think we are witnessing an uptick. I don't think we can deny that. But also there is more awareness. And I'm hopeful, actually, that people are reporting more. Not that there is more, but that if there is any amount that is out there, that people are reporting it. So I think there's some amount of increased reporting. But as it relates to the actual rise, which I don't want to diminish or minimize in any way, I think there's a number of things going on. I think the rise of social media and the, you know, electronic world where, you know, someone can host a KKK rally online in minutes. You know, it's much easier, and the anonymity that provides to be hateful online is something we can't ignore. Also, the transition of sort of from a industrial to a post-industrial economy that's underway right now, particularly in the United States, which is, you know, wreaking havoc on traditional sources of income. And to what Alana, you know, was talking about, anytime people are threatened or don't have the security that they feel they need or that they deserve, they look for scapegoats, for people to blame. And so I think that is also happening. Alana, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, I would add that one of the interesting things is, particularly in bigger cities and in other parts of the country, but also I think here, it's very important to understand that actually anti-Semitism, there has been an uptick in anti-Semitism, a slow uptick, for much longer than I think we've perceived. It frequently was focused on people who were visibly Jewish, though. So in New York, for example, we've been seeing an uptick in attacks on Jews who are more religious, who are visibly showing signs of their Jewishness. So what this seems to indicate to me is that there's been something brewing which speaks directly to Jackie's point about about the economy and about the changing way that society and our civic spaces are organized. As people become less confident and less secure in their own lives, and I don't think that it's a moment and a plummet. I think it's been happening over the last decade. They are looking to explanations for why they are unhappy or why they are unsatisfied in some way in their life. And unfortunately, one of the first places they look to is the possibility that there is some fantasy group of people who are actually the cause of all their problems. And if simply they could be dealt with or eradicated, their problems would go away.
We know we have had some tremendous tragedies. Not long ago, the Tree of Life shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh. But what are some other ways that this manifests, perhaps, Jackie, in ways that we don't see heavily covered on national news? When we talk about a 57% rise in anti-Semitic incidents, what are the incidents? How do they play out in the country?
Yeah, so, you know, there's certainly the catastrophic violence that we've seen at synagogues, obviously not only in Pittsburgh this year, but unfortunately also in Poway, outside San Diego in California. And those were just 6 months apart. Also, you know, for context, keep in mind, how many years of American history did we go without one of these incidents? And in the last 6 months, we've had two. So I think that's particularly remarkable. But beyond sort of, you know, that level of violence, certainly there is graffiti. You know, there was right here in Cincinnati, there was a swastika spray painted on the sign of the main sign at Hebrew Union College in Clifton. You know, there's all sorts of, unfortunately, calls we get at the JCRC from students, Jewish students in schools, area schools, who are, you know, bullied in an anti-Semitic way. And really, I hesitate even with the word bullying because I think it goes, some of this language that we've been hearing peers are using goes beyond bullying. It's really, in my opinion, evidence of indoctrination of some serious hatred, Holocaust denial, those kinds of things. And so, you know, we're there to support those not only those students and families, but teachers and administrators in those spaces to try and foster a more tolerant space in schools.
Alana Newhouse, who joins us on the phone today, is the featured speaker at the event that we are talking about today. It's a program on the oldest hatred in a new world. It is the annual meeting of the Jewish Community Relations Council based here in Cincinnati. And Newhouse is the editor-in-chief of Tablet Magazine. And in the aftermath of the Tree of Life synagogue shooting, in which 11 people were killed, Tablet Magazine pulled a half dozen staff members to Pittsburgh to cover it. Alana, tell us about what you and your team found or learned during your news gathering there.
One of the things that I found to be very moving was the way that the community and the entire city really responded in the wake of that shooting. Thing that we've written about a little bit on the site, but the most incredible thing was there was an event, a memorial event, and there were speakers there from across the political spectrum. There were speakers there that fully half of that audience never expected to be in a room with and did not agree with. And everybody felt solace, even from people with whom they very, very strongly disagreed politically. And it was so meaningful to me, in part because it made me realize, and actually the mayor of Pittsburgh effectively said this at the memorial, he basically said that what Pittsburgh was trying to do by actually being physically with each other in mourning was to counteract the effects, some of what Jackie was talking about before, which is the ways in which the internet creates bonds between people in virtual spaces that are incredibly dangerous, and actually they are the challenge to our lives. And what the aftermath of that shooting did was it affirmed that it was your physical, real-life connections that are what was going to heal that city and, I think, frankly, the country.
Alana, how would you say that your storytelling and your team's storytelling was different when it was coming from a Jewish perspective rather than through the traditional press?
One of the things that we realized right away was that according to Jewish law, people who die have to be buried within 24 hours. But one of the things that we realized is that because the crime scene was particularly gruesome, there was no way that any of those people were going to be able to be buried within that time. And so the community was actually going to experience an elongated period that was going to be unusual for a lot of them of grief before the funerals could take place. And it was understanding things like that that allowed us to report and ask questions of that community that got to their lived lives as how they were actually going to be experiencing this, Jewishly and not.
The New York Times covered your coverage of the event, and I want to read a bit from that Times article from November. It says, quote, "During a brief lull on Tuesday, Newhouse gathered with the Tablet staff at the kosher vegetarian Milky Way restaurant in Squirrel Hill. It would be one of their last meetings before many of the group returned to New York, and it was a time to reflect on what the experience of covering the shooting and its aftermath had been like." Alana, talk about that moment and how your team reflected.
I know it doesn't seem, it seems weird to say, but I think that reporting and journalism is the best career in the world because you get to speak to other human beings. And one of the things that's been so dispiriting about the most recent past is the way that journalism has migrated to email and texting and virtually trying to literally just get in touch with people so you can get a quote. The most enriching and affecting and dramatic experiences, I think, of all of our recent years was being able to sit in the room with people who we were reporting on and to meet their spouses and to see their homes and to hear them talk about a tragedy, not over the phone in an anonymous way, but but actually inside of the spaces that they in which they live. I think it allowed us to tell a story in a different way. And then what I hope we're going to try to do is remember that journalism can be done in that way and try our best, even when it's not a tragedy, to do the work inside of the spaces where people actually live.
And Jackie, what do you see as challenges that your own organization faces when trying to get coverage in the local mainstream media outlets, whether it be us or the TV stations or the various newspapers? Is there a learning or understanding gap by the mainstream press when it comes to Jewish issues or concerns?
So full disclaimer, I spent time as a news reporter in this city. So many of these people who are covering the kind of stories that we're talking about are my colleagues, former colleagues. And I have tremendous respect for all of them because I know the kind of work that goes in behind the scenes to do what they do. You know, that being said, I think, listen, Jews are a minority in America, a significant minority. I mean, 2% of the American population. And so understandably, there's a learning, you know, there's a learning gap there. And that's really core to our work at JCRC is helping to pull back the curtain a little bit and help people understand who we are, who is the Jewish community. And by the way, I should say communities, because we are certainly not a monolith in any way. And, you know, what are the various levels of observance? What does that look like to your, I think, really powerful question to Alana about the difference in sort of that Jewish lens and in that sensitive coverage? You know, what kinds of things do we need to help people understand? And actually, I want to stress that for a minute, because I think in this moment where we're looking to each other to be allies, we're looking to build bridges in this sort of fight against the rise in bigotry and hatred of all types, I think it's really important that we give each other some grace. Because, you know, in many ways, sometimes, you know, this effort that the climate has prompted is a new thing. And we're getting to know each other in new ways. And you know, I'm never offended when someone comes at me with a question, you know, that's sort of seems like it might be out of left field, or, you know, a pronunciation issue, or what was that you said about Saturday's Shabbat? Is that what it's – okay, Shabbat. You know, those things are people who are, for the most part, really just genuinely trying to understand each other. And so we, you know, we want to be an open space where we can have those dialogues and have that really develop meaningful allies and partnerships in that way.
But Cincinnati has a very unique role in Jewish history, particularly Reform Judaism,
yes,
with
yes.
its foundations here and its temple and the Hebrew Union College.
As old as the city.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So do you think, when we think about Cincinnati history, all of us, whether we have German connections or not, are very anxious and excited to celebrate Oktoberfest every year and to talk about the city's German history. Do you think that the Jewish connection in the broader community is lost or not understood enough?
No, it's great that you bring that up, because you're right. I think that we are our neighbors in Cincinnati perhaps know us much better than maybe in other cities because of the historical connections that and sort of the you know, the way the Jewish community grew up with Cincinnati. You know, you mentioned Plum Street Temple, right? That's probably the perfect visual example is Plum Street Temple right across the street from City Hall. You know, this is the foundations really of Reform Judaism in America with Isaac Meir Wise and Hebrew Union College here and the American Jewish Archives. I mean, we have an incredible footprint here in this city, and it's been a historic footprint. And so I think that in many ways we are ahead of many other cities in having those relationships and our neighbors understanding who we are and what we bring.
Alana, I wonder if from your perspective, you think that the national debates that we see on cable news channels or that pop up on social media involving this or that member of Congress has had negative impacts on more fruitful dialogue about the Jewish experience and anti-Semitism in the country?
So I always think that politicians have negative effects on fruitful dialogue in general. But I want, in a nod to Jackie's call for grace, I want to acknowledge that people are afraid and they may be grasping at bold-faced conversations, in part because they don't know how to have more local and more relevant conversations about the kind of work that they need to do on the ground in their own cities, in their own communities. And it's not that the conversations about politicians or stuff that's happening on a national level are not important. They are. I also think that it's important for those politicians to understand the effects of their words on all kinds of communities. Because social media echoes those words. But that said, I think that you're right to point out that if we only have a certain amount of energy and there's these enormous firestorms of outrage being focused on what are effectively not the real work of rebuilding spaces, creating lives that are safe and enriched. And I think that we are allowing some of those conversations to be distractions.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking today with the editor-in-chief of Tablet, Alana Newhouse. She'll be the featured speaker at the Jewish Community Council's annual meeting this evening. And we also have Jewish Community Relations Council Director Jackie Conjato with us. And we just have a few minutes left to go. I want to point out a piece of an op-ed from New York Times opinion writer Barry Weiss. This was published in November about the Tree of Life shooting. Quote, "The heartbreaking coincidence is that the Jewish emphasis on the open door, on welcoming the stranger, is exactly what the Jews of Tree of Life and the Jews of every synagogue, big and small, in every far-flung corner of the globe, were reading about this Shabbat morning." I want to ask you both, what lasting impact have the Pittsburgh murders had on the regular operations of synagogues across the country? Is there increased security? Are there increased levels of fear?
So that's a completely honest question. And the completely honest answer is, of course, people are concerned. The level of concern has, I think, certainly ticked up. I think our efforts to meet those concerns and to meet the modern challenges of security have gone up. There's no denying that. But what's particularly powerful and what actually that quote from Barry's op-ed reminded me of is something I'm going to speak about tonight, which is the fortitude of the Jewish people throughout time. We're talking thousands and thousands of years of anti-Semitism, from the pogroms in Russia to the Holocaust in Europe and on and on and on. When faced with these existential threats and, you know, deadly threats, the response, the strength in the Jewish community comes out in the response to anti-Semitism, that it is not one to turn inwards. Traditionally, historically, it has not been one where it would be totally rational to shut our doors and barricade others out and remove ourselves from other spaces and other communities. In fact, it has been the opposite. It has been to open our doors and to pursue justice in other communities alongside our friends and our neighbors. It's been to welcome the stranger with more enthusiasm. And that really is the work of the JCRC and of the JCRC network and Jewish advocacy organizations all over the world. And it will continue to be our work because anti-Semitism, while it may be as old as the Jewish people, it's never defined us. It will never define us. Our response to it in terms of working to repair the world and working to be invested for our own community and for those around us, that will be our legacy.
USA Today reported on some incidents. One rabbi in Riverside, California now begins services with an announcement about where the exits are in case people need to run for their lives. Glen Rock, New Jersey, a rabbi unsure what to write on signs at the temple's entrance. The first message read, "Entering a secure space," but that wasn't exactly what she wanted to convey to people arriving to worship. According to USA Today, a synagogue in San Francisco allocating an increasing amount of money toward airport-style metal detectors and security guards, while the Christian church across the street has open doors. And then a deadly shooting at a synagogue near San Diego as well. But we have seen mass shootings and tragedies at other religious institutions. You think Charleston, you think about the Islamic Mosque in New Zealand.
Sri Lanka.
And, exactly. And even the school shootings. I mean, there are mass shootings that are happening across the place, but how are the various religions specifically coming together, and what role does Judaism play in this? And I'll go to you, Alana, first, in trying to offer up some collective path forward past all this tragedy.
You know, I have to say that in this, it really, one of the things that's kind of striking for me is the way in which a lot of people, some particularly younger people, and also both Jews and non-Jews, don't understand that there are organizations like the JCRC, which is amazing, because I hear them say, I wish there was an organization that actually allowed me to know where I could go, what kind of security they had, and also helped me engage with the outside community. And I want to, and I always look at them and say, you know, there is that organization. It actually exists. You don't have to build it from scratch. I think that what we're now seeing, and I know that every one of us feels that we wish that the cause had been different, but what I'm certainly now seeing is a growing awareness that the Jewish community had been highly organized and highly structured and has a lot of the foundational structures for protecting its own community and also for engaging with the outside community. And I would really encourage everyone, both Jews and everyone from all communities, to look to those organizations because they are the beating heart of engagement in our civic spaces. And I really think that they're the path forward.
The Jewish Community Relations Council's annual meeting is this evening. We've got a link to details at wvxu.org in the Cincinnati Edition section. I want to thank Alana Newhouse, the editor-in-chief of Tablet, who is the featured speaker tonight, for joining us, along with Jewish Community Relations Council Director Jackie Conjato. Thanks for being here, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks.